Hi, David. How are you?
Hi, Jill. I'm really good.
The day after your Riverdale episode aired, episode, I believe,
Yeah.
7 of
Nope,
season 5.
83. It was chapter 83, they called it Fire in
Chapter
the Sky.
83. Well, the latest episode of Riverdale that
Yeah, it was
just
actually
aired.
they called it episode 507 on the script.
507. Okay, well, we just watched your episode of Riverdale last night, and we had to interview. David Lorraine is the consummate actor that is so known in Alberta. You have been on every set that I've ever been background on as an actor, and you're a dialect coach. You've been in the
I
industry
am.
since 1979, and
Yep.
it's pretty incredible that you've influenced a lot of the people just doing what you do. And
Oh,
you know,
it's
you
nice
love
to hear.
acting very much. You're
Yeah.
serious. You're a little bit more serious than the more other people that I interview. You give back. You're a dialect coach, and I've actually experienced your class, and I learned so much from
Oh,
it. I'm very
good. I'm
appreciative.
glad to hear that.
How are you doing being in Calgary right now during this COVID time?
I'm fine. I'm staying smart, staying healthy. There are just little things like, you get kind of depressed and a little tired sometimes and wondering what that is. I just had a physical, and because I was wondering, because I get so tired in the afternoon, I'm thinking, am I just getting old or what is it? So I went and had a full physical and blood test and everything, and I'm fit as a fiddle. So I got to try and figure out why I'm getting tired in the afternoons. My doctor thinks it might be sleep apnea. So I'm going for a sleep study next in a couple of weeks, and I might have to strap on one of those CPAP devices and hopefully get over that. I mean, I've always been, Mr. Energy ball of just I can go for hours and hours and hours and not with that much sleep. And it's always been a trademark of who I am, was that boundless energy. So, to hit 67 years of age and then suddenly realize I don't have the energy I had any. And it's disturbing, and I don't like it, and I want to fix it.
You have to. Sleep is so important, and breathing, your breath.
Truly,
Mixed
truly is.
with that, if you're
Totally.
having actual issues, it could be a medical thing. It could be mental. There's so much issues of depression happening because of this COVID time. I'm sure you're separated from a lot of people as well. You have to try.
My grandchildren. I miss my grandchildren.
Well, I bet you do. I think for that, you need to try herbs, ginseng, try implement different products and foods that you've never tried. Start researching what foods do give you energy. It's a thing, being 67 years old and where you're at right now, I wouldn't give yourself too much of any heck.
We just bought a brand new bed too, a very expensive brand new bed. So it's one of those Tempur-Pedic things, and it molds to your body, so it's supposed to give you better sleep as well. So I slept straight through last night on the second night in it, so it's all good.
Everybody's having some hard times during this time, but
Indeed.
we were really excited to see that, you were still working. And during the pandemic, you filmed Riverdale. We want to know all about it. It's our favorite show at I'm Here With Magazine.
It was quite a surprise, actually. I mean, that was probably my fourth or fifth audition for Riverdale, and every time I auditioned, I thought, they're not going to bring me out there. A nobody from Calgary. They're going to bring me out to Vancouver. So I did the auditions because, because my agent sent me, and I got a new agent a couple of years ago, and he's connected with an agency in Vancouver. So I thought that would be a good thing to get some audition opportunities in Vancouver. So I kept auditioning for it, kept auditioning for it, and finally, I'm thinking they'll never hire me, so it's fine. I'll do it for practice. And sure, lo and behold, my agent called me up and said, so they want you out in Vancouver. And I thought, no callback? No, you know, no, I thought I might get a Zoom callback or something. Nope, went right straight off tape.
Wow.
And so I started getting emails saying, this is where the limo's coming to pick you up. They treat you so well, you know.
Yes.
Limo picks you up from home, takes you to the airport, so you don't have to worry about parking your car at the airport or anything. Then you get on the plane, and everything's all paid for. And then there's a limo that meets you in Vancouver, takes you to the hotel. You get this. I went straight from the airport to the production office where they give you a COVID test. And here's the cool thing, in Vancouver, under UBCP actress. If you go for a COVID test and you're not working that day or getting a costume fitting or whatever, you're paid a day's wages.
A day's wage. Wow.
Uh-huh. A day, your full day rate. Yeah. So, and I was tested 5 times, 3 times. It was one, 2 times, once for costume fitting and twice, the days I was actually shooting. And then twice, 2 other times. And so I got paid for 2 COVID tests, and then you put up this gorgeous hotel right downtown. And I had lots and lots of time because I only did 2 little short scenes. And so I shot I arrived on Friday, had the weekend off, costume fitting on Monday, costume fitting COVID test on Monday, shoot Tuesday, rest of the the week off. And the weekend, and then back shooting on the last scene on Monday, fly out on Tuesday. So it was nuts. So I got a lot of nice walks outside with old friends, and just nice socially distant walks, and I connected with about 5 or 6 old friends. And,
that's cool.
Had a lovely time.
What's been the response of people that you personally know seeing you on one of the biggest shows in the world right now? Like, this is a big deal, David, to be,
I guess I'm not a huge fan of the show myself, if we're gonna be honest. It's just not my cup of tea, I guess. It was nice to be on it. Nice to be a part of it. I'm getting some emails from friends. My oldest, dearest friend who actually met me, he's from Nailers in Chilliwack. So he drove in to have a nice session, chat and walk with me. And what did he say? He said something like, there he is. He said, so fun watching our friend David Lorini on Riverdale last night, hoping the fire chief keeps coming back. Me too, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything.
I thought you were great for the role. I would have loved to see you, in more scenes, or maybe back. You never know.
No, they could have me back next season for some reason. If they, I was looking, I'm usually pretty honest with myself when they look at my work, and I looked at the work and I went, yep, that's fine. It worked. And I believe the guy. So,
you did too. It was a really great scene. Yeah.
It was very interesting.
The iconic booth. So it's not just
Pop Chocolate Shop. Yeah,
it's
more. Yeah, KJ was very nice. I enjoyed working with KJ. He was a sweet guy. It was his first scene back, after a month hiatus. So he had 2 weeks. He was 2 weeks in LA, and then he had to quarantine for 2 weeks in Vancouver. And he was pleasant. Interesting thing happened though. Cool. That I should share. I don't want to sound negative. I was grateful for the experience, but a couple of things. I was watching the scenes, those 2 little short scenes. I'm still amazed that they went to the expense and effort to bring me out for those 2 scenes when there's like 1,000 actors dying for work in Vancouver. And I'm sure there's 10, at least 10 or 12 or 20 or 25 actors who could have fit into that role, and they could have done it for a lot less money.
They could. David, with that kind of stuff, when they saw what they wanted, you were it. So even
I guess I had the right look for once I had the right look. They were okay with a short bald guy. But the other thing, it was interesting too, on the second day. So I had my first scene alone in the booth with KJ, and he was nice young man. So the next was with these 4 or 5 other guys, And do you know, and this is a, was a lesson for me next time, if I ever, ever get a part again on a regular, on a series where, you know, when you're on set a lot, and, you know, day after day, and you, you know, you get to know, it's become family. You know that not one of them came up to me and introduced themselves to say hello.
Really?
Nice to have you aboard or anything like that. I don't know. I mean, I don't expect anything. Oh, just a shake of a hand and say hi. And just introduce yourself. But yeah. I was invisible until I started speaking my lines. And then that's the only time they ever looked at me.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it is in the professional world. It's different. You know, that's good you told us that, David, because a lot of people who get into this industry, as you know, as a dialect coach as well, they're looking for the fame. They're looking for that family feel, the excitement, the attention part of it. And we'll tell you, David will tell you, it's not all about that when you're on set, even if you're not a main cast member. I find that too, where it's like,
you know, it's a...
It's,
as you know, it's a hard thing to be a day player when you just walk onto a set and it's, you know, there's a big machine, there's a huge machine going all around you, and you know, you're kind of, your head's on a 360 degree swivel trying to figure out what's going on, what the atmosphere on the set is like. Can you mess with the lines, or do they want you to say the lines exactly? And it's just so nice. And I've worked with major, huge, big stars, both as a dialect coach and an actor, and you know, some of the biggest stars are the most welcoming. They'll come up to you and say, hi, you know, I'm Ted, nice to meet you, welcome to the show, you know, and it's just to make you feel a little bit more comfortable on set. It's good for the show, you know, and they know that. You know, one of the best was Peter Scolari on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, on the third day, he knew everybody's name, and he knew what the kids' names were, and he knew that they were golfing on the weekend, and you know, you could see the surprise on their faces, because I worked, my first day on the set was his third day on the set, and he was, you know, he jumped out of the van, we get out of the van, we get to go to the location, and he goes, hey, Jill, how you doing, how's that interview show going, good, Tom, how was your golf game on Saturday, and they were all just looking like, what? and of course, eventually they would do anything for Mr. Scolari. And it's just, it's good business. It's good for the show. So anyway, it was an object lesson for me that if I ever get into that position where I'm, you know, even as a dialect coach, I'm on set a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like I'm part of the family. Most of the time, most of the time. Yeah. And you know, I'm going to make a point of going to people and saying, hey, nice to see you, you know, welcome. I oftentimes will, you know, on Tin Star, I would wander into background holding just because I knew so many of the guys, you know, and guys and girls, and just go and have a little visit and say how you doing and how things going. And I think, you know, they appreciate it.
It does. Yeah. When I've seen you do that before, when I've been on set of Fortunate Son and Tin Star as well, I would see an actor that I, you know, is in our midst that's made it as an actor and not just background. It's, you get that excitement. Oh, I know him. I met him before. Oh, I seen him on set. You're right. That really does create an ambiance for the rest of the people around you to feel happy or excitement to see an actor that is on set. To be able to, you know, the story of when they were on set is half of the experience of doing the acting. Hey.
Yeah, you know, here's another aspect of that. I've seen really good actors handling both of this situation differently. You have a stand-in, you know, so there's got somebody's been standing there for 20 minutes or half an hour, and some of them ignore the stand-in and they'll just say, you know, first team, second team, stand down, and first team moves in. They ignore the stand-in. Others, I've noticed, and some really fine actors and decent human beings will shake the stand-in's hand and say, is there anything I need to know? You know, or just say, thank you. That's all it needs is shake the hand, look them in the eye, acknowledge them, their presence as a human being, that they're doing a job and it's a valued job. And so, you know, that's what I do now. I try to anyway, if I'm not, you know, sometimes you're wrapped up in your work and you forget to do stuff like that. But you know, I like to contact my stand-in and say, thank you. Is there anything I need to know? you know, because, you know, sometimes you got to move through three marks and, you know, you have to hit a certain spot. And, you know, and they appreciate it, and it makes them feel more comfortable and part of the team as well.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to know that, that's very important for the actor to feel comfortable. Being a dialect coach as well, you have worked with people like Demi Moore.
A little bit. She was pretty good, you know, and you have to get a sense from somebody whether or not they want your help. So with Demi, she just kind of went, so here's what I'm going to do. Okay. So she did it, ran a few lines, and she said, how's that? I said, yeah, that's good. And, you know, I like this. And I think you're hitting that vowel, right? Just be careful of this. Make sure that you're not, you know, sounding Southern. It's more of a Midwest thing. So she goes, okay, yeah, like this. And I go, yeah, okay, great, thanks. And that's about all I did.
Wow.
But she never, I got a sense from her that she really didn't want too much of my input.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And, you know, some actors like to have a dialect coach there all the time. Others want nothing to do with you. Some of them are really resistant. Some are very, very, very open to being coached and want you to coach them. Mm-hmm. Aidan Quinn used to, almost after every take, they would say cut, and he would go, David, where's David? David. How was that? Anything? You know, he was really good that way.
Cool.
Yeah.
How did you get into actual dialect coaching alongside your acting career?
Yeah, a long story. But you know, I started acting, as you said, in 1979, and it was before that, well before that, yeah. But it was around the time of Rat Race, actually, maybe shortly thereafter, that I started dialect coaching. But yeah, no, we had in my actor training program at the University of Alberta, we had a dialect teacher, and he was very good at doing dialects. He wasn't very good at telling you how to do the dialect, you know. So we would just go to him and say, I've got to do a Scottish accent. Here are my lines. Can you do them? And you'd stick a microphone under his nose, and he would just read the lines for you in a Scottish dialect. But he wasn't very good at helping you, guiding you through in terms of breaking down a dialect. So even those days, I would be in the class, and he would do wanky things in the class, you know, teaching us a poem or something. And I just thought, I just want to know how to break down, how to analyze a dialect. So I thought, you know, I could probably teach this better than him. God bless him. I loved him. He was a wonderful guy, but not a great dialects teacher, great dialectician. Anyway, so being a character actor, you know, because when you're a short, dark little guy like me, you don't usually get the leading men part. So I get a lot of character work, and a lot of it had to do, you know, I needed to do dialects. And I'm a fairly precise and analytic and methodical actor. So I want to make sure that my dialect is right. So I started reading books and getting tapes and investigating dialects and learn to do it, create a method, an analytical method of working with dialects. And so I thought, okay, now I have a great system of learning and acquiring a dialect. So about 1999, you know, we actors get these blank spots in our work. We're sitting around for a couple of months and nothing to do. And I thought, what can I do that would be interesting and fun? And I would like to do that. I might be able to pick a few extra bucks up, you know, doing. And I thought, hey, you know, I could be a dialect coach. So I'll get my ducks in a row, make sure I've got it all written down exactly what I do. And then I started sending out notes to all directors and producers and theaters saying, I'm now a dialect coach.
Okay.
And this one lady, who, God bless her, she passed away a couple years ago. Her name is Helene White, and she had a production company. And one day she called me up shortly after I'd sent her the letter, and she said, David, I'm producing an American show for Nickelodeon. And it takes place in Montana, but they're shooting it here. Would you be able to teach young actors how to sound less Canadian, more American? I said, absolutely, I could. So she said, good. So she hired me, and I was the dialect coach on that show for the full season. And then it just kind of caught on. People, the next producer came along and said, we need a dialect coach. And somebody from that production said, well, David Rennie was on Nickelodeon. He did a great job. So they said, oh, okay. So they called me up, said, they asked me, you know, if I was available and how I worked and would I be available to do the show? Yeah, I said yes. So I started getting a reputation with the local producers. And so now whenever a show comes to town, they usually call me up and say, we need a dialect coach. So are you available? Yeah. So that's kind of how that happened. On that show, I didn't know how to, what rates to set, or so I just kind of grabbed in the air. I thought maybe they'll accept this. And it was pretty good. You know, I was probably making $2,500 a week doing that. And
nice.
And thinking, wow, getting away with murder here. Eventually somebody came along a couple years later and they came to my, they were doing a show for a very low budget movie. And he went to Actor and said, I need a work report for working with David. And Actor said, what? And so I had a little conversation with Actra, and they said, you know, you should be working under the Actra jurisdiction. I said, yeah, but this company won't be able to afford it. And that's a lot. It's very expensive to hire a dialect coach under Actra. So I said, here's what we do. So here's what I propose, that an actor is hired by a company and they need to do a dialect. They will recommend me, that the actor go to me. I will work with them and they will pay the fee that I would charge the actor. And the business rep said, okay, yes, we can work with that. But she said, if you ever step on set, then that's, you got to work under the strict actor jurisdiction, right? And I said, yeah, because it's a health and safety thing. You know, I want to make sure that you're covered. And I said, okay. So, and then the next show that came along, I think that was Horses of McBride. And I was called up and said, can you be Aidan Quinn's dialect coach? And I said, sure. Yeah. How many days? And they said, well, he's on set for 19 days and we want you there for every day. And I said, yeah, under the actor jurisdiction, right? I said, you know what the rates are. And she heaved a huge sigh. I went, yes. and I said, and you're good with that? She said, yeah. And I said, okay, then I clear my calendar for you. I will be available. And yeah, so it's been very lucrative. So
good for you. That's such an inspiring story, David. Like, we see you as an actor mainly, but you're right, behind the scenes, you are on set with a lot of other actors who are rising and come into town and need somebody. That's very cool.
It's interesting learning. I've made mistakes along the way, but it's always a learning experience in terms of how to deal with actors, and each actor works in a different way. And I think part of the reason I've been successful in film and television as a dialect coach is because I am an actor.
Yeah.
And I know how actors think. I know how actors talk. I know how to talk to actors. I know when an actor probably doesn't really want to hear from me. I say to a lot of actors, look, I'm going to try to be sensitive to your needs on set and whether or not I should give you a note. But if it's too much, if the director's asking you to do something and you've got 10 props to work with and it's a real complicated blocking maneuver, I said, and if I come in to give you a note on the dialect and it's too much and you don't want, I said, just put up your hand and shake your head and I'll walk away, because that's more important than the sounds that come out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my oath to them is I don't want to get in your way in terms of your acting and what's going on between you and the other characters, what's happening and what you're feeling and what you're trying to accomplish in the scene, because that's more important than how exact your dialect is.
Wow. I know, we don't think about that being Canadian, how important it is to have the American accent down.
Yeah,
a lot of people, I think I took your class on recommendation of Yvonne Chapman or something, because she had been posting about you and said, well, you need it, you know, in order to shows out of, you know, we're Canadian, yet we're shooting a lot of projects in the States. And the people like you who know how to do the American accent, you book, you know, not all the time, But yeah, you're booking. Yeah. And people who don't have that accent clearly aren't booking. So I say to people, well, I guess that's a requirement then of any Canadian actor, is to have that on their resume and to know
yep.
it.
In order yeah. to- yeah. If you talk to anybody who works a lot in Vancouver, they've got it. They any almost every Vancouver actor, you know, who does book work, they have that American thing. And in fact, I've had to kind of uncoach some of them. You know, if they're playing, if they're in a doing Canadian, yeah. and they're supposed to be Canadian, and then they're making American sounds, I'll just pop in and say, by the way, do you know that you're saying that word in an American way now? I know you're Canadian, but. And they go, oh God, yeah, so what should I be? What's Canadian again? and so I have to kind of push them back into Canadianness because they've yeah. forgotten how to do it. Yeah, it's mainly the owl sound, house, out, about, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we went through all of that. When we go through your course, anyone who does take your course or doesn't know about it now, I was mentioning to somebody else doing your interview, and I said, well, his interview or his course I took was no holds bar. At the beginning, it was like, okay, guys, so this is how to get into it. So this is the vowels, is how you say it. And I thought, you know, I love that you went right to what we need to know instead of like yeah. a whole talk about it or something. We so much within that hour. And you sent us the sheet. Anybody who's listening to this interview, check out David, because you're going to need his course, especially if you're from Calgary.
Yeah, it's as I say, my course, it's too easy a thing to acquire to if it eliminates you from getting the work, you don't want it to. It's a simple thing, you know. I give you all the tools and all the breakdown and everything, and you don't want to lose the work simply because you're not sounding American. And you know, even though we can't hear it, they can. That's clearly. The thing. The producers, you don't forget, they've been in LA listening to American actors, and they're coming into Canada, and they're very sensitive to that sound, and they don't want to hear it because they can hear it. We can't very often, but I can, but as Canadians. And so that's what I do, is I try to set up your antennae so that you're able to hear the what's Canadian and what's American, and the sounds that you're making are different from theirs.
Yeah, very important, guys. Very important. So, David, let's talk more about your acting roles. Fortunate mm-hmm. Son was fairly recent on CBC.
Unfortunately, they didn't pick it up. They didn't go to a second season, which is...
No, they didn't, hey? No.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I really like that. Well, you're good.
Yeah, I was playing the administrator of the scientific research organization, and I was a bit of an antagonist, a bit of a villain in that one.
Yes, your attitude was a bit more mischievous I like it.
I often get smart. They often cast me as smarmy characters.
I know, but you're so nice and like down to earth and calm. Like you play very like opposite characters of who you are, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I've seen almost like all of your work. Sometimes I can't rattle off what you've been in, but it's like if you're in a project that's, you know, shot in Alberta, like. Or if there's a project in Alberta, you're in it.
Well, but some of my favorite ones are the ones that, you know, that are little shows, because if generally speaking, you're going to get a local actor is going to get a bigger part in a locally produced show. Like I just did In Plain View. I played old man Koraluk. He was kind of the guy at the seedy hotel. He was the behind the desk in this seedy hotel. That was a fun role to play. He was a nice old dude, but and he got his comeuppance in the end. I played Dr. Burke in the Irish. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. Oh, it's gone. Film. I think I might have my resume here.
Good. I know. I'm looking at everything you've been in, like from Heartland. That's where I noticed.
I did Heartland. I was in the first season. I think the last episode of the first season of Heartland. The Ballad of Audrey Earnshaw. That's the show.
That's still coming out, or did that just come out?
No, it's out.
Yeah, it just came out.
It's come out. You know, and I had a nice little role in Tin Star. They cast me. They used me as a dialect coach first, and then it was funny. They were looking for a character to play one of the Ammonite elders, and they said to the casting director, "So we need somebody like this to play a role." And she says, "Well, you got him already." And they said, "What do you mean?" "Well, David Lorini, he'd be perfect for it." And they went, "Yeah," and so they just hired me. I didn't have to audition for it or anything. They just said, "David, we want you to play." The elder, I've forgotten his name. I had a nice little bit in Fargo. Scene in Fargo, but it was me and Billy Bob.
Yeah,
it was a great little scene. One of my favorite things that I've ever done.
What made it so great for you? Is it because of Billy Bob, or like what was about the?
No, partially because of Billy Bob. I had actually worked with Billy Bob before, a couple of years before, or a year or so before. And there was a movie being shot up in Edmonton called Cut Bank, and I was the dialect coach on that, and he was in it. And I was told not to coach him. They said just let Billy do whatever he does, whatever sound he wants to make, then just leave him alone. I said, no, it's fine. I'll work with the others. And so he arrived on set, and it was, you know, this was not long after his infamous interview with John Gomeshi, where he looked bad. He looked like a villain. And so anyway, I thought, oh God, he's a bit of a jerk. So I should at least, because I'm on set a lot as a dialect coach, and I'm popping in and whispering in actors' ears. So he was getting wired up for sound, and I just said, I went up to him and said, "Hi, Billy, my name's David Lorini. I'm the dialect coach, and so I just want to let you know that I'm around." And he said, "Oh, you're the dialect coach." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, good. Look, I'm trying to do something different. So would you keep an ear out for what I'm doing and let me know if I'm..." And I said, "Oh, you want me to give you some notes?" And he said, "Absolutely, absolutely." So I said, "Oh, okay." And so they shot the first scene. They did the first take, and he looked over at me, and he kind of waved at me like, "Oh, how was that?" And so I went over and I said, "Well, there was one little sound, a few," and he said, "Oh, good, yeah, thank you, that's great. So he did it again, and I think he came up to me after and he says, I don't think I took your note very well, but he says, "It's okay, we'll get it in post." He turned out to be the nicest guy. Yeah. So then a year or two later, when I got to do that part in Fargo, he remembered me, and we talked, and it was nice to know that he was a good guy, and it allowed me to relax a little bit. But you know, I love the character. It was a colorful little character, and you know, I got to do the dialect, and it really is one of the favorite scenes I've ever shot. A, because it's Fargo, of course, and it's really well written.
What did you think about Fargo going, you know, to Vancouver with Chris Rock?
They went to Chicago, actually.
Oh, Chicago! Right.
Yeah, Chicago, and if it was as if it was Kansas, Kansas City, I think. Yeah, well, it was unfortunate, but you know, that's the way things go, and I'm not sure